Hello and welcome to the Pantograph. This is Sharon. I'll be bringing it to you today, which is Wednesday, May 13th, 2026. We begin our reading on the front page with The Bright Side, Chicks Teach Life Lessons. McLean County kids learn while caring for and hatching eggs. Trinity Lutheran School third graders in Jill Peters' classroom were excited about holding the chicks they had tended to since before they hatched. "They're going to poop," some said, waiting to clean up after them. Lucy Cotton, 9, told the Pantograph during a classroom visit she liked learning about the chicks and enjoyed holding them and seeing how they grew. "I like that the chicks are calm, and they just like to chill, and they like to play," she said. "I like how they develop in the egg and how they come out of the egg, and they dry really fast." Peter's class, with 16 students, was among more than 100 public and private school classrooms throughout McLean County participating this year in the Chick It Out program, a project of the University of Illinois Extension, 4-H McLean County, and McLean County Ag in the Classroom. Each classroom typically receives about a dozen fertilized eggs, and for 21 days they take care of the eggs by monitoring the temperature and humidity. They learn about what a developing embryo looks like each day, including seeing their comma-shaped body, the eyes, and the blood vessels, Peters said. "This year we had 18 eggs. Early on in the development, we knew that a few eggs were not going to develop. So we predicted 14 eggs or 14 chicks, and we hatched 14 chicks," Peters said. "So it was a great experience." "We learned all about God's creation," she added. "We learned about the life cycle. And we learned that we have care and concern, and we can show that to other students, but also to God's animals." The program was piloted in 1989 and originally designed for at-home learners, and it was officially branded locally as Chick It Out in 1990. Peters has participated since the program came to Trinity Lutheran about 19 years ago. Peters said her class has science instruction twice a week, and throughout the three-week process, they dedicated that time to the chicks. They also incorporated lessons during English language arts time, too. They also turned the eggs three times a day, in the morning, before lunch, and at the end of the day. And throughout the first couple of weeks, they candled the eggs, which refers to shining a bright light, usually a flashlight, through the egg to observe the internal development and monitor development. Peter said the program is something all of the kids look forward to in third grade. "We learn the difference between the fertilized egg and a not fertilized egg, and all the different parts of the egg, and how it would change. But just knowing that they were the ones monitoring the temperature and the humidity, we read about where the incubator should be and just the science behind everything here," she said. Student Evelyn Stanek, 9, said she liked seeing how the eggs developed into baby chicks, and she learned about how they start as an embryo and grow into a full chick. "It was really fun. And it's fun to just see them develop," she said, noting she also liked holding the chicks. This was the first year for Mila Monroe seeing the program from beginning to end as 4-H youth development educator in McLean County. She's been with the organization for more than 2 years and with the U of I Extension for 12 years in various roles throughout different counties. U of I Extension's 4-H school programming and community clubs include STEAM in the Classroom, which brings science, technology, engineering, art, agriculture, and math to McLean County classrooms. Chick It Out falls under STEAM in the Classroom, Monroe said. The program is called Chick It Out locally, but is recognized statewide as the embryology and incubation program, she noted. I got the full experience of all of it this year, so we have a long-standing history, and we have a lot of folks who have done it for many years, she said. Each year, they offer online registration, which is open for about 6 weeks, and email all of their past participants. The sign-up response determines how many fertile eggs they need to order. Participants also are given the option to borrow an incubator from the extension, but some teachers have used grant funds to buy their own incubators. Extension also shares resources, activities, and information about embryonic development with the teachers. This year, the incubation process began on April 6th and continued through May 5th. At the end of the program, the chicks are dropped off at the extension office, and a few local farmers take the chicks and raise them. Some teachers keep the chicks for themselves or find good homes for them. Normal Ready's contract, new construction deal may top $34 million. Hoping to get the long-delayed Uptown Underpass project back on track, town officials intend to bring a new general contractor agreement with a small increase to the Normal Town Council on Monday, May 18th. The town has been working with Peoria-based P.J. Hoare to take over the project at a cost that officials estimate may be about $34 million, but the final figure was not available. The council voted on November 3rd to approve a $32 million construction bid from Millstone Weber of St. Charles, Missouri, with the intention of beginning construction that month. The company withdrew from the project on January 26th. However, the town then turned to P.J. Hoare, whose $32.2 million bid at the time was slightly higher than Millstone Weber's. City Manager Pam Reese said on Monday that town staff has been working to place the revised contract on the council's agenda after negotiations and additional reviews by project stakeholders took longer than expected. I was optimistic. Glass half full, Reese said. Honestly, I can tell you that my intention, our goal, is to put this on Monday's agenda. So we missed it by about a month in the process of negotiating. In late March, town officials had said a revised contract would come before the council as early as April 20th. Reese said Union Pacific Railroad required the town to go through the railroad's review process before a final recommendation for contract approval could be brought to the council. All the various stakeholders were taking a look at P.J. Hoare, who is now the sole responsible bidder in the mix, Reese said. Through their approach to construction, we had to wait for everyone to give their approvals, which took a little bit longer than we anticipated. The pedestrian underpass under the Union Pacific tracks would connect the Mark R. Peterson Plaza between Uptown Station and the Children's Discovery Museum with the future Uptown South development. Public Works Director Ryan Otto said the delay was mainly tied to Union Pacific's review process, not the Federal Railroad Administration. But the town is still in communication with the federal agency about the project. There's been a lot of communication between us and the FRA, but no holdups as far as the contract negotiation process, Otto said. The revised P.J. Hoare contract had previously been estimated at $33.7 million, about $1.7 million more than Millstone Weber's final bid last fall, and about $1.5 million more than P.J. Hoare's. We expect it to be very close to $33.7 million, Otto said. We do expect a small increase from that, but we expect to remain in the range. Reese said final construction details were still being worked out this week, including tweaks related to Union Pacific's request for clarification of construction means and methods. Otto said those changes involve temporary shoring elements used during construction near the railroad tracks, but they will not change what the public sees when the project is complete. On the back end, we changed the design for some of the temporary shoring elements and received approval to move forward with those cost-saving changes from Union Pacific, Otto said. What the public sees and the scope of the project will not change at all. The total cost of the underpass project, as approved by the council on November 3rd, was $40.3 million, about 42% higher than the previous estimate of $28.3 million, and more than triple the $13 million estimate from 2017. The remaining costs outside the construction contract are tied to design, site preparation, utility relocation, and other expenses. If the council approves the revised contract, Otto said the town would like to begin work as soon as possible, though construction would not begin immediately after a vote. There's a lot of startup time. Not just signing the contracts, but also working with the suppliers to get inventory, mobilize equipment, processes, and staffing, Otto said. We would expect a summer mobilization. We do not know exactly when that will be yet. The first phase of work is still expected to begin on the south side of the railroad tracks. The project is also relying on a $16 million federal build grant from the Federal Railroad Administration. Reese said the town has received additional direction from the FRA, allowing Normal to spend the federal dollars first before the grant deadline of September 30, 2027, then use local dollars afterward. The town previously identified June 1st, 2027 as its target date for substantial completion of the overall project. Reese said the FRA guidance gives the town a path to move forward while using the federal dollars within the required timeline. Basically, the direction from FRA is that the project can move forward, and we have the ability to use their dollars first and spend those within the grant timeline, and then our local dollars after, Reese said. Reese said the town has drawn down about $2.5 million from the build grant so far. If the council decides not to move forward with the project, she said one risk would be a potential requirement to repay that money. We also will share with them the risk should council decide to terminate the project, Reese said. One of the risks would be a potential payback of about $2.5 million that we have already drawn down from the build grant. I do not know if that would be absolutely required, but that would be a risk. If the project is rejected, the town would have to work with its grant partners, including the FRA, the Illinois Department of Transportation, and the Illinois Commerce Commission, to determine what repayment or other risks might apply, Reese said. The project narrowly passed on a 4-3 vote last fall and has remained a subject of public debate as costs have increased and the timeline has shifted. Reese said the staff still believes the project is important because of the safety and accessibility concerns it is intended to address for rail passengers, pedestrians, and bicyclists moving between the north and south side of the tracks. Currently, rail passengers needing to reach the south side tracks at Uptown Station have to cross at Broadway. If the project does not happen, we still have accessibility issues for rail passengers, pedestrians, and bicyclists, and the like, Reese said. We are feeling really good about that this project can still solve and address those concerns. Reese said the staff also plans to ask the council on Monday to approve another grant agreement with IDOT for $2.5 million through the local project funding program, which would go toward construction engineering for the project. Town officials also expect to ask the council to approve an updated ordinance related to issuing municipal bonds for the project that are to be paid for with tax increases that took effect on April 1st. The council voted on November 3rd to raise the town's food and beverage tax from 2% to 2.25%. and the hotel motel tax from 6% to 8%. Reese said the previous bond ordinance is now nearing expiration, and the town has not yet issued debt because officials wanted to make sure the project is moving forward. In another underpass matter, Otto said all utilities are out of the way except for Lumen, a fiber optic company, which will likely appear on Monday's agenda. Otto said no additional railroad approvals are needed before construction can move forward, though the project will still require ongoing coordination with Union Pacific for issues such as final temporary shoring contractors, use permits, access easements, and railroad flagging. In terms of approval to move forward with the construction, we have that, Otto said. Reese said the town staff will provide the council with information on the latest cost, refinancing plan, and risks before asking members to make their final decision. The best we could do is provide council enough information where they feel good about making a sound decision, and then staff will react accordingly, Reese said. Teens take fresh food to hospital. This story is part of a series that features Pontiac Township student projects. For Pontiac Township High School seniors Peyton Beebe and Nolan Menenga, a class project about hospital food started with a simple idea. Patients should have access to meals that help them recover. The two students are part of a dual-credit Environmental Earth class in partnership with Heartland Community College, where students work on projects related to human interactions with the Earth and its environment. Their project focuses on bringing locally grown, nutrient-dense food into hospitals through a farm-to-table model. Working with Spence Farm in Fairbury, the Livingston Area Career Center, and OSF Healthcare St. James John W. Albrecht Medical Center, the students helped prepare meals using local ingredients and tested them with hospital staff and visitors. The idea began in the fall after students spoke with Marty and Will Travis of Spence Farm and with Matt Burton, Vice President of Operations at the OSF Hospital in Pontiac. The idea came up that we could work with Spence Farm to try to incorporate the food they have into hospitals in some way, Peyton said. Peyton said food from Spence Farm is more nutrient-dense than food people may typically find in a supermarket, grocery store, or hospital setting. The students took food from Spence Farm to the culinary class at the Livingston Area Career Center, where they helped prepare meals, which were then taken to OSF for a test run with hospital staff and visitors. For Peyton, the project was rooted in the idea that everyone wants the best care possible for their loved ones when they are sick. Everyone has loved ones who eventually get ill or sick, and you want them to be in the best care, get the best nutrition and proper health, Peyton said. You want them to have the food they need to recover quickly. That's what sparked it. Nolan said the response to the project has been positive so far. The students gathered feedback through Google Forms after testing soup at the hospital and at the school. He said conversations with Burton and others connected to OSF showed that people were open to the idea and saw the need for better food options in hospitals. People are actually on board with it, Nolan said. They kind of realized that we do need better food in hospitals. This is something we could probably all get behind. The project also connects to broader conversations about local food systems. By using food grown closer to home, the students said hospitals could potentially support local producers while providing patients with more nutritious meals. Nolan said long-term funding would likely have to come from OSF because the hospital system would have to purchase the food from Spence Farm, has provided strong support as the students have worked to test the concept. Spence Farm has been great, Nolan said. They have definitely given us the resources to make this happen because they want to see this change. Peyton said the products from Spence Farm have a longer shelf life, which could help make the meals more practical for use in hospital settings. If you put it in the fridge or freezer, it will last longer, Peyton said. That also helps make the soup more nutrient-dense and better overall. For both students, the project has offered a chance to work with people and organizations outside the classroom while developing something they hope can continue after they graduate. Peyton said he would like future students in the class to pick up the project and keep it moving forward. I would say to students taking this class next year that I hope somebody or a group picks up our project, Peyton said. I think it really does help the community and could eventually help other communities around the world. Nolan said the class has challenged him to take ownership of an idea and step outside his comfort zone. The big thing is you can get a lot out of it, but you have to apply yourself outside of your comfort zone, Nolan said. When you do, great things can happen. He said this class is different from many others because students are not simply handed a strict outline to follow. Instead, they are encouraged to develop and pursue their own ideas. After high school, Peyton said he hopes to travel around the United States or the world before eventually opening a restaurant somewhere in the West. I want to help other people and provide my food experience to others, Peyton said. Nolan said he plans to become an electrician in the union, then eventually get into real estate and hopefully start his own company. As they prepare to graduate, both students said they hope the project continues to grow beyond their time in the classroom. For Nolan, the lesson is that students should not be afraid to take on something new. I'd say step outside your comfort zone. Definitely pursue getting into this class. Today's Flick Fact Question. Entertainers all obviously have their big start somewhere. Can you name the enormously popular singer who says he has a special place in his heart for Bloomington Normal because it was the site of his first big arena show? Was it 1, Kenny Chesney, 2, Phil Collins, 3, Bruce Springsteen, 4, Barry Manilow, or 5, Elton John? And the answer, it was 4, Barry Manilow, who had a 1975 show at Illinois State University Horton Fieldhouse, his first big show, as he later told a 2012 U.S. Cellular Coliseum, now Grossinger Motors Arena, crowd. Horton is where Manilow, who created the State Farm jingle, Like a Good Neighbor, says he and his band had to run to their limousine along College Avenue to avoid fans pursuing them. "We were stunned and thrilled," said Manilow. Or as he later sang, perhaps as an ode to normal, "Looks like we made it." From the past pages of the Pantograph, how time flies locally. 100 years ago, on May 13, 1926, clothiers from McLean, Livingston, Woodford, Ford, and Logan counties will be at a district meeting at the Illinois Retail Clothers and Furnishers Association, called by Robert DeWinter of Bloomington, district director. Among those present will be speakers Morris Meyer of Springfield and Jay Heber of Hudson. 75 years ago, on May 13, 1951, Carter Peitsch, postmaster, and his drivers stopped a moment to look over the fleet of six freshly shined new trucks the post office has received in the last year to replace the 1929 and 1930 models they had been using. 50 years ago, on May 13, 1976, Raymond and Eleanor Wells, both 36, of Elk Grove Village, are natives of Bloomington. They won the millionaire drawing in the state lottery at Carbondale. Wells, a graduate of Illinois State University, has taught high school Spanish for 15 years. He and his wife met at ISU. And 25 years ago today, on May 13, 2021, Illinois State University President Victor Boschini is a self-described commencement nut, and that may be just what it takes to dash to six ceremonies in a 12-hour day. "I don't think it's a chore. I love commencement," Boschini said. "I think this is really a time when you have to give back to the students and especially the families. Most important," he said, "is the emotional impact of the occasion. It's rare these days for schools as large as ISU to have graduates walk across the stage and hear their names called," he said. ISU, which had 2,752 students in Saturday's ceremonies, does it by having a separate ceremony for each of its six colleges. Lunchtime concerts returning to downtown. The City of Bloomington's Park and Recreation Department free lunchtime concert series will return to Withers Park this month. The series will kick off with acoustic and electric sounds of the Tiki Twins on Wednesday, May 27th. Each concert takes place from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. The rest of the lineup includes June 3rd, The Aristocrats, June 10th, Tyjon Carley, June 17th, Unfinished Business, June 24th, Jim and Tommy. These lunchtime performances are a great opportunity to get outdoors and spend your lunchtime listening to local musicians in beautiful downtown Bloomington. Picnic tables will be available, but attendees are still encouraged to bring lawn chairs and arrive early. You can visit bloomingtonparks.org or call 309-434-2260 for more information. We'll take a short break now and then return with the second half of the Pantograph for Wednesday, May 13th, 2026. Please stay tuned.